Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, I think we'll dive in because it is. We'll start right on time for those of you that got up early and came. Thanks for waking up early and coming. I was telling the first couple of people that walked in, I spoke twice at Exponential last year, but it was in the middle of the day, and Larry Osborne was speaking next to me, so I thought nobody's going to come to my session, but this is Larry Osborne's brother, the more famous, so I just want you to know that he's in my session, not Larry's. Larry's a good friend, and so I'm thankful that you guys got up early this morning and came. I'll tell you a little bit about me because most of you in the room I don't know. I see a couple of familiar faces, but my name is Brian Howard. I've got a family picture here that you can see. So that's my family. Four kids, married for 22 and a half years. It's our Christmas picture last year. So, this is my second year speaking at Exponential. In terms of what I do in life, I've been a pastor for 23 years. I'm mainly around the LA and Orange County area. I worked with Acts 29 Network for 12 or 13 years. I currently oversee the 13 West Coast states for Acts 29. So everything that happens sort of west of the Rocky Mountains. I also serve as chairman of the board of Acts 29, so I work closely with Matt Chandler and Steve Timmis and those guys. And then I have a coaching company. I've spent the last 10 or 12 years coaching a lot of pastors. So I've coached a lot of large church pastors and church planters and nationally known pastors and worked with Andy Stanley's network for 4 years. I've coached all the North American leaders with Acts 29. Russell Moore, Josh Harris, lots of guys like that. So so what I do is basically help churches do leadership development, help churches plant churches. I'm a local guy. I went to Talbot Seminary. So if you're local, that's my background. Planted a church, pastored it for 9 years. And then we sent several church plants out of our church as well. So I coach leaders and plant churches is basically what I do. So what I'm going to do, Exponential this year has asked me to speak on a couple of things. My first session today, I'm going to speak twice, but my first session today is the why and how of developing leaders. And this is based on lots of ministry failure. So everything that I present to you today is based on both success and failure. There are lots of mistakes that I've made and realized, wow, after doing it this way for 4 years, this didn't work very well. Maybe I should try this. And then just watching what's happening in the church planting world and the church leadership world is really interesting too in terms of what it looks like to develop leaders. So several years ago, I went through Network Leadership's Young Leaders Journey. I don't know how many of you have been through that, but they take pastors that are pastoring very large churches that are under 40 years old, and they put you in the same room together. So I went through that with J.D. Greer and with Sean Lovejoy and with Mark Diamaz, who's here at the Mosaic booth, who's speaking, several of us. And I remember every time I would get together with the Leadership Network crew, they would ask us, what do you need? And every single time, every pastor in the room would list the things that he needed. And it was always like, I need an executive pastor. I need a youth pastor. We need church planting residents. And if we added up the 12 of us that were in the room, how many staff people we needed to hire, it felt like there were 25 staff positions needed in the room. And every time, without fail, I would realize all of us are trying to find staff people to fill in positions on our staff that we needed in our church. That was the issue that always arose, was the need for more leaders. Now, I spend about 2 days a week on the phone coaching usually lead pastors of larger churches, sometimes executive pastors and mega churches, but I spend a lot of time coaching pastors. It is amazing how many conversations I have with people who will say, hey, we need a children's director. We need a lead pastor. We're looking for a church planting resident, not a lead pastor, an executive pastor. I mean, everybody wants to hire an executive pastor right now, it seems like. Every church of over 70 thinks they need an executive pastor. We used to only do that if we were in larger churches, and now you'll hear church planters in churches of 70 talking about their exec guy. I'm like, are you allowed to say that in a church of 70 people? But everybody seems to be looking for somebody to export or to import from the outside to hire. I've never heard a church leader say, not a single time, we just don't need any more leaders. Never heard anybody say that. I've never heard a children's director say, we just have so many people serving that we don't need any more. So it seems like most of my conversations, people are saying we really, really, really need more leaders. Now, just if you're in church ministry of any kind and you feel like you wish you had more leaders, raise your hand. Anybody? So most of you are here because of that. Now, most pastors, now, perhaps you're not all pastors in this room, but you work in church ministry in some capacity. Most of us have no intentional plan for developing leaders. Now, I went to seminary. I was just talking to Bob, Larry Osborne's brother, and Larry Osborne was one of my seminary professors here at Talbot. We've been friends ever since. I learned really well in seminary how to interpret the Bible. I took Greek and Hebrew. I ran into a guy yesterday that was in my preaching sermon prep class with Don Sanukian. If you went to Talbot, we haven't seen each other in 15 years, you know. So I learned how to preach. I learned how to interpret the Bible. But I might have taken one class that had a couple of sessions on how to develop leaders. So we know how to preach and we know how to counsel, but we're often ineffective at training both current and future church leaders. After 25 years of ministry, I would now argue that this is perhaps the single most important thing that you can do as a pastor. And if you're here not as a pastor, but you're in vocational ministry or lay ministry in some capacity, I would argue that this isn't just optional, but it's mandatory. You have to be replicating yourself. There are two things that I want you to see today. All right, I want you to see, first of all, why we need to develop leaders. And think of your context in terms of where you are in your church. And then second, how to develop leaders. All right? Now, I know it's morning and some of you haven't had coffee yet. So if you're in, say we're in.
We're in.
All right, here we go. All right? Why develop leaders? I'll start with this. And I want to give you three reasons to develop leaders because I just want to lay a bit of a biblical foundation here. There are a couple of open seats as you come in. And if you're willing to scoot together, I know you hate when we do that in churches, but people are still coming in. There are a couple of three reasons I want to give you for why develop leaders in your local church. Now remember, the primary thing that I'm trying to communicate to you, so get this in your head and think of this throughout the whole morning session. Get this in your head. There are not enough leaders for you to import from outside for you to not develop your own. So let's start with three reasons for developing leaders. Number one, developing leaders is the biblical pattern and mandate. This isn't just something that I came up with that would seem like a catchy new trend in ministry. It's the biblical pattern and mandate. Not necessarily posting a help wanted sign at Talbot Seminary or wherever you live. Not necessarily calling all of your friends and saying, who do you have that we could hire that would be a church planting resident? But actually finding ways to train up and develop your own leaders. All right? Developing leaders is the biblical pattern and mandate. We see that Jesus was a leader developer. So Jesus spent most of his time developing just 12 men who would go on to impact the world and would write most of our New Testament, right? So Jesus did this. In fact, if you do a search of the New Testament or study the New Testament, and you look at how much time Jesus spent in public ministry versus with his inner circle, only 17 times does the Scripture record Jesus ministering to a large crowd. But 46 times, we see him with a small group of people. 46 different times, three times as many. Now, Mark 6 is an excellent example of this. If you look at Mark 6, I think it's verses 12 through 16, you see Jesus gathering up his followers, a small group of them, and sending them out to preach and to heal. He says, I want you to go out through the villages, and here's what I want you to take. And if they don't receive you in the village, here's what I want you to do. And when you get there, he says, make sure that you stay in the house that you're in. He's teaching them and training them. And then he says, come back to me, you know. So we see Jesus training a small group of people, sending them out, teaching them what they're to do, training them, spending a lot of time with a small group. Now, a lot of pastors, if you're a lead pastor, even a youth pastor, you feel like maybe my role is to stand in front of a big group of people and teach. Now, I've been doing that for many, many years. I've pastored churches from 12 people, because I planted a church, all the way to 4,500 people. Spent 3 years preaching in front of over 4,000 people every Sunday. So I pastored churches of all sizes, yet our calling primarily is not necessarily to stand in front of large groups of people and preach. We see Jesus spending most of his time with a smaller group of people. Another thing, Jesus seldom did ministry by himself. always had a group of people with him. I did youth ministry in Huntington Beach here for 5 years, and I remember reading a book or an article or something that said something like, youth ministry is taking kids to Taco Bell. So every Tuesday, for probably 4 years, I took a young freshman named Drew Trzezinski in Huntington Beach, who wasn't a Christian, who was from a fairly messed up background, to Taco Bell every week until he became a Christian. And I read, Drew's like 35 years old now, serves in ministry, and I got a letter from him about a week ago. And it's interesting, he probably doesn't remember much of what I said, speaking in front of a large crowd of people, but he remembers the fact that I spent regular time with him developing him. So we see Jesus was a leader developer. We see that Jesus seldom did ministry by himself. No matter what he was doing, his disciples were with him or they were nearby. So all that to say, developing leaders is the biblical mandate. We see that Paul was a leader developer as well. All right, the Apostle Paul was committed to developing leaders. We see this in his investment in men such as Timothy. If we read the book of Philemon, which is an amazing book, if you're a pastor and you've never preached on that little letter, amazing. We see the fruit of all of Paul's leadership development commitment. Because Paul's over in Ephesus, and Colossus is like 70 miles away, and there's a little church over there of his converts, and this whole situation is playing out between Philemon and Onesimus. So we see clearly that Paul developed leaders. He wrote whole books geared toward developing leaders. We see in 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul says, "What you have heard from me, entrust to faithful men." So why should we develop leaders in all our local churches? Men, women, pastors, lay leaders, why should we do this? Because it was the biblical pattern and mandate. Here's a second reason for developing leaders. Apparently I had all these on the slides, so just to reinforce these, there you go. Second reason for developing leaders is that there are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to not develop your own. There just aren't enough prepackaged leaders. Monday of this week, I didn't come over to Exponential. Last year I did a pre-conference, but this year I didn't. So Monday I was on the phone with, I think, 7 pastors, 1 hour each. And it's sometimes, and this is going to be recorded, so I'll be careful what I say, but sometimes I'll get on the phone with a pastor and I'll feel like, have you not heard what I said? You've lost 3 pastors. You have nobody waiting in the wings. You're trying to hire 3 people. And you're calling me saying, I need 3 pastors to hire. 3 people have left. And we need to hire 3 new pastors. Who do you know? And I think, I usually think anybody who you would want to hire, there's about 15 other people trying to hire them. They're going to cost more than you're willing to pay. I mean, I was recently coaching somebody in the Southwest who was trying to hire a children's director. And I said, how much are you going to pay for that role? And this pastor said, we're going to pay $32,000 a year or something like that. And I said, so are you going to find a children's director for $32,000 a year? He's like, yeah, that's the going rate. I just thought, yeah, but there's 20 other churches trying to hire a children's director right now. You're going to pay $32,000 a year when it's going to cost $190,000 to buy a house. This was not in California, as you know. Because multiply that number by 4, and that's what, you know. So he was trying to import a children's director. After 9 months of searching and hiring a search firm, ended up raising up a person from the inside. So you know what a prepackaged leader is? Here's what a prepackaged leader is. Someone who's seminary educated, but not jaded, gospel-centered, strong character, super gifted, but doesn't want your job, and willing to work for $32,000 a year. So you know what that person is called? A unicorn. So that person does not exist. So you feel like we need to hire a person, bring him from outside. So we're going to hire Vanderblumen or Slingshot or Nancy Moore or somebody like that. We're going to try to import a person. I want to say to you that I believe that the era of hiring leaders from the outside is mostly past. All right. Now, when I came out of seminary at Talbot, there was a job board. I mean, I walked those halls for many years. If you went to Talbot, you probably know what I'm talking about. There was a job board in Myers, in the Myers building where I went to seminary. And on that board, you could flip through pieces of paper and you could see what churches were hiring. And that's how you got a job coming out of seminary. But I would say that era is past. Like, you can still go on churchstaffing.com and put your resume out there or try to find somebody. But when I was pastoring at Sojourn Church in Louisville, which I did for 3 years, we were trying to hire 3 campus pastors, and I was in charge of that. So I hired 3 campus pastors, launched 3 campuses, and I remember I would advertise this, Southern Seminary, Church Staffing, Gospel Coalition, all these different places, and I would get 200 resumes. And I would flip through all those resumes, and just after like 50 of them, I would just like, can somebody else go through these resumes, please? And 198 of those people we weren't going to hire. You know, it's just so difficult to find outside leaders to hire. So you may occasionally hire a leader from the outside. You know, Andy Stanley would say, if you want to change your culture, hire from the outside. If you like your culture, hire from the inside. I would just say, really, really, really difficult to find leaders from the outside. They just aren't there. And if they are there, they probably won't work in your context anyways. All right? So you cannot afford to import leaders into most of your context. One of the things about California, I live like 20 minutes from here. So I live in Orange County, lived here for a lot of my life. The cost that we pay for a house here, if you live in LA, Orange County, San Diego, you know what I'm talking about. The cost that we pay for a house here makes it so difficult for a person to come from Texas and move here and buy a house. Because most of you can't pay that children's director $120,000 a year. But I just read an article saying it takes $144,000 a year to qualify to buy a house in Orange County or Los Angeles. That's why in my neighborhood, kids leave, live in apartments, like after they get out of high school, go to college, they move to Irvine, go to college, live in an apartment. Then they move back home with their babies for a year or two so that they can save up for a down payment. Like we just can't, in California, we can't import leaders that went to Southern Seminary in Louisville and are used to living in a place for $500 a month, and they're just not out there anyways, all right? Now, I've written quite a bit and spoken about the importance of geographic chemistry in the past. Another thing that I've seen is it's really hard to import a leader into your geography and have that leader stick long term. So for 3 years, I sat with Southern Seminary students every Tuesday. Like 45-minute slots. You could make an appointment with me on a Tuesday, 45 minutes, and I would sit with these guys that were about to graduate from Southern Seminary, and they would say, we want to plant a church. And I would say, where do you want to go? We're going to downtown San Francisco. Where did you grow up? I grew up in rural Alabama. And I would say, do you know anybody in San Francisco? Nope, but I need to get out of the Bible Belt, you know? You know anybody who's ever planted a church in San Francisco? No, I don't know anybody. Are you sure you're going to San Francisco? And I would say, you're not going to San Francisco. And people would say, more people leave your office crying than anybody we've ever seen. Like the church planting heartbreaker. You know, I'm sure that somebody at some point in history has moved from the South to downtown San Francisco to plant a church and survived. But I've never met that person, and it probably happened before our era. So there's a lot to say about geographic chemistry. All right, so I was coaching one of Andy Stanley's leaders once, and this young man said to me, Pastor's a big church in Atlanta, it's like 8,000 people. He said to me, we never hire anybody from Texas. Now, I'm not saying we as in North Point. I'm not making that blanket statement. Just him and his church. He said, we don't hire people from Texas because people from Texas always want to go back home. They love Texas. He said, and so you hire a person from Texas, and this is, I'm not telling you his name because it's off the record, but he said about 4 years later, that person's like, man, I just miss Texas. So just realize it's really difficult. There are not enough prepackaged leaders. It's difficult to in people into your context. Everybody's going to tell you in the interview phase, we love the weather in California. We've always wanted to move to California. We're tired of Iowa. We think California is amazing. And then they're going to get here and have a couple kids and say, our kids are never going to see the grandparents. And so I'm just saying you have to think about that. There's not enough prepackaged leaders. Everybody's trying to hire the same person that you're trying to hire. It's hard to import them into your context. Now, I'm not saying don't ever do it. I'm saying most of the time, I'm giving you a rationale for raising up your own leaders. You need leaders who get your culture, who've been developed under you, who love your city. All right? Now, occasionally, you'll bring somebody in from the outside. But for the most part, develop your own leaders. And then lastly, I want to say this, all right? One more reason to develop leaders. There are not enough prepackaged leaders for you to do what God has called us to do. So if you sat through the first two main sessions yesterday, I was in both of those main sessions, and Ryan Kwan's a good friend of mine. So Everybody was cheering for Ryan because he brought 26 people from his staff to the conference also. So, and then all of us that love Ryan. But if you sat through that yesterday, they were talking about the importance of, like, being a level 5 church is about being a multiplying church. So if God has called us to spread out and plant churches, where are we going to find those church planters? Are you going to sit over at Talbot Seminary or wherever you live, hoping that they're going to come out of those classes? I would say we've got to raise them up. We've got to raise them up. If we're going to plant churches, we have got to raise up leaders who are going to go out and plant churches. If God's called us to be multiplying movements, where do we expect those leaders to come from? So listen, now this is going to sound a little indicting, but if every time you're looking for a church planting resident or a new pastor on your staff, if you're looking to hire from the outside, I would say there's something flawed in your leadership model, because you're not raising up leaders. You might say, we need leaders now. You know, I was listening to Craig Groeschel speak at the Catalyst West conference a year ago, and Craig Groeschel was talking about his 5 top leaders. I think four of them came from inside and have been with them for 20 years. So I'm saying there are just not enough prepackaged leaders out there for you to import and for us to do what God has called us to do. All right? How will we, you know, there are 75 million people in the Western United States. In the 13 states that I oversee for Acts 29, 75 million people. How about Los Angeles? You know, Los Angeles is bigger than 43 states in America, population-wise. My wife and I have been all over the world. I'll be in Europe next week. I go to Europe 2 or 3 times a year. We don't even leave Southern California to go on vacation anymore. We just feel like, let's just drive over to Laguna Beach. It's only 20 minutes away. There's so many things. So we've got an entire country and infrastructure right here, all right? And it's something like 5 to 10% of the people that we have are churched. There are just not enough prepackaged leaders for us to do what God's called us to do. Now, next I'm going to go into how to develop leaders. So I hope to have convinced you that you can't just hire from outside. You can't just contact seminaries and church staffing. It's up to you to be thinking 3 years in advance. And let me just say this, it's not in my notes, but one of the things when I do consulting with the church, I always have them write a church staffing plan. So just think about this for 30 seconds, and it's a whole different, I've written on it so I can point you to that. But think about where your church needs to be in 3 years or 5 years staff-wise. So let's say right now your church is 200 people, and you feel like 3 years from now we hope to be 350 people or 400 people, and to be sending out a church planter, then you've got to be planning right now for where you need to be 2 years from now. I'd like to be able to say to you, if you're a pastor, show me your staffing plan, and you pull it out and say, 2 years from now, we think our budget will be $450,000 or whatever it's going to be. I don't know if you pastor large churches or smaller churches or what size dynamic churches you're in. You should know 2 or 3 years from now, here are the positions we need, this is the intern we need, and you should be working on developing those people now so that 3 years from now, you have the people that you need. All right, how to develop leaders. Let's move on to this. Number one, realize that you will reproduce who you are, not what you say. I couldn't teach this without saying this. I'm a guy who is, because I learned this, I feel like, the hard way. I'm a guy who is naturally, I don't know if naturally, if it's personality or discipline, or maybe it's a combination of all those. I would rather work than watch TV. I would rather work than do almost anything. And so I write a lot of blog posts on being present to your family, and a lot of that is being written to me. Now, my wife is here in the room, so she'll tell you that I strive to do that, that I fight to do that. But I'm just saying, doesn't matter what you say if you don't do what you say. So let's just consider prayer. Okay, I think I probably spent my first 5 or 6 ministry, a few years in senior lead pastor ministry, planting a church, and we prayed just sort of because I felt like, well, we probably should pray. You know, so we would pray before, but we weren't really deeply prayerful. Now, the way I lead Acts 29, like, I just had 22 leaders from all over the country fly in last week. We did a 2-day summit. We now spend half of our time praying and half of our time planning. That's how we split up our retreats, praying and planning. So if we say that we believe in prayer, then we should pray. So I guess my main point is here is you're going to reproduce who you are, not what you say. Last night I had dinner with a guy who's here. He's a lead pastor at a church in Hawaii. And I hired him when he was 20 years old from within. He's about 35 now here at the conference. And it's interesting to me to see the fruit of the guys that I've trained up over the years, because a lot of those guys have gone on to pastor churches and plant churches. There's quite a few guys that came through the process that I'm going to teach you that are pastors now. And it's interesting just reflecting on what I did 15 years ago and how this leader is leading now. So I just want to tell you, no matter what you say, people are ultimately going to watch you. All right? So I'm a fan of having people around you and inviting you into their home. Like I said to some of you, Larry Osborne's brother Bob is here, and I know Larry really well. I've spent a lot of time with him. I've roomed with him. I've spoken at conferences with him. I've been in his home. I've been in his backyard at his fire tables, because Larry opens his home to the people that he mentors and pours into people like that. And so just remember, you're gonna reproduce who you are, not what you say. All right, doesn't matter how awesome your sermons are, ultimately people are going to watch the way that you interact with people, and that's what they're going to remember. All right, secondly, how to develop leaders. All right, I'm going to teach you a very specific process, and this is something that I've implemented as a lead pastor, as an executive pastor, as a youth pastor. I can't contextualize it for every role that you're in, but I have done this with two groups of women, all right, as well. Didn't turn out very well when I did it. So I'll tell you a little bit about that today. You ladies in the room, I'll tell you how you can do this with a group of ladies as well. So I'm going to give you one sort of system or way to develop leaders. All right. First of all, is identify a few people that you want to invest in. All right. So no matter what role you're in, if you're a lead pastor, if you're a lay elder, if you're a children's director, if you're a women's ministry director, whatever you do, identify a few people that you want to invest in. Identify maybe 6 or 8 or 10 people. Just choose a few people and say, I'm going to intentionally invest in a few people. And let me just give you a few categories for considering the kind of people that these would be. All right. Consider faithful volunteers. So look around and just consider faithfulness. I'm not a huge fan of, like, let's figure out who all the biggest givers are in the church and invest in them necessarily, or let's figure out who the most successful business people are. I would say, look at who's faithful. Who are some people that you would just say, these are some faithful people that are faithful volunteers? Consider people who have come to Christ in your church. Consider people who have come to Christ in your church. Just a little bit of a side note. If I were planting today, sometimes my wife and I say, why does God allow young people to have children? Because we don't get a do-over with our kids. So my oldest son's a freshman in college, and our youngest is 11, and we just feel like, man, we have been such idiots as parents. We read all the books, we went through premarital counseling, we have a happy marriage, and it just feels like we should get a do-over. Like, can we go back and parent our 17-year-old again, you know, and do things differently when they were 3 and 4? We don't get to do that, right? We don't get to do that. God is sovereignly determined that God has determined that young people will raise kids. I feel the same way about church planting. We send young guys, like I was young, out to plant churches, and then we do lots of stupid things, and then we learn from those things, and then 16 years later we speak at conferences and tell other church planters not to do those things. They do the same things because the church planters think they know everything, right? And so they do all the same things. They're like, you're old, this is a different generation. But I'm telling you, one of the things that I would do completely differently if I planted another church today, and I'm old and tired, so I'm not sure I will, but one of the things I would do completely differently is I would not be taking prepackaged people who would come from other churches and putting them in leadership positions in anywhere in the first 5 or 6 years. Because it's amazing, because when you're a lonely church planter out there and you feel like we have no leaders, and all of a sudden so-and-so comes along, and he's 55, and he's been an elder for 71 years, and he knows everything about the Bible, and he wrote a systematic theology, and you're like, that guy could be, you know, what I learned is that doesn't always turn out to be great. You know, and if I had to do it again, one of the things I would do is I would focus much more day one from saying, we're primarily going to put people who have come to Christ in our church, we're going to train them up, be slower in leadership development. So consider those who have come to Christ in your church. Look for people who are teachable and available. Another thing is live on mission and invest in non-believers. I mean, so many of the leaders that I've trained up have been people that I lived on mission. They came to Christ under my ministry. We trained them up into leadership, and then they served as leaders and went on to... There's a whole group of guys in Huntington Beach who came to Christ as freshmen in high school. I was doing youth ministry with kids that were primarily living on the street or kids that were from broken homes, and a whole group of kids came to Christ. Those kids are all now in their mid-30s, and most of them are serving in ministry. I took 16 unsaved kids to Hume Lake. So I got our church to pay for 16 unsaved kids to go to Hume Lake. We go to Hume Lake. They're all freshmen. And there's a really sort of mediocre speaker there that week named Francis Chan. And we're just like, we just hit the jackpot. Francis Chan is here, and we have 16 unsaved kids here, you know. And Francis had not written his books and that stuff then. But most of those kids came to Christ that week. And those kids have all gone on, most of them, not all of them, but most of them have gone on to serve Christ and to do ministry, and they're serving in youth ministries and local churches around Orange County. I think if you have spiritual converts that have come to Christ under your ministry, that's a great place for you to begin investing. All right? Just remember, disciple making begins with non-disciples. All right? So identify a few people that you want to invest in. Now, people will call me and say, so I'm thinking, should I invest in college students? Should I invest in older people? Should I choose a group of people that are mixed in terms of age? Should I invest in men and women together? I would say ultimately, it kind of doesn't matter. It's like, you know, the perfect is the enemy of the good. If you sit around for the next 4 years trying to figure out who the leaders are you're going to develop, 4 years from now, you will have developed no leaders. So pick 5 or 6 or 8 people and say, I'm going to intentionally invest in these people. All right? Number 3 is put an intentional process in place. Put an intentional process in place. A couple years ago, I did some writing, and the title of it was Sink or Swim is Not Leadership Development. Now, I've seen this in younger churches, especially in younger testosterone-driven churches, i.e. the 29th chapter of Acts. Okay, so I've seen sometimes this idea that we're just going to throw guys out there, or we're going to throw people out there and see who rises to the top. And that's a bad leadership development philosophy. Okay, so to just say, hey, sink or swim, we're going to throw them out there and see who survives, that's not a good philosophy of leadership development. It doesn't work. And here's another thing that I'll hear people say, well, that's what I did. Somebody threw me into the deep end and I swam. And I would say, yeah, but just because that was what you did doesn't mean that's going to work for 9 other people. So maybe you're a complete rock star. You probably think you are. So you're saying that's what I did. And so that's, you know, I'm going to throw these 5 guys out there. And if they survive, then great. You know, I would just say that's a bad leadership development process. You need some kind of process, intentional, to develop leaders. Okay? And any process is better than no process. But I'm going to give you one to think about here that you can implement. All right? Think through what an established leader, okay, in terms of developing a process, think through what an established leader looks like. Now, write down these 3 C's. They're not new to you probably, but content, character, and competence. Probably heard those words before, but I'm not talking about hiring, or I would have said chemistry also. So content, character, and competence. So if I'm saying choose a few people that you're going to invest in, all right, second, put an intentional process in place. So what's an intentional process look like? It should involve all 3 of these things. Content, character, and competence. Or head, heart, and hands. You could look at it like that as well. All right? Depending on if you like H's better than C's. All right? So content would be, what kinds of things do these leaders need to know? All right? So content is what we do in seminary or college. All right? It's content. We read books. We study things, we listen to sermons. These kinds of things are going to be addressed through reading or teaching. So if you're training a group of future church planters, you're going to say, what kinds of content things does a future church planter need to know? Well, you need to know, you know, how to run these systems for a local church. You need to know how to preach. Like different things, I guess preaching wouldn't be content. Like you need to know. You need to have a decent understanding of systematic theology and biblical theology, because if somebody comes up to you and asks you a question about God, you should probably be able to answer that question if you're a pastor, right? At least be able to open Grudem's theology in front of everybody and say, I think it's right here on page 241, right? So So when you think of training leaders, think of content. Now, if you're a pastor in this room, then I would ask you, think what are five or six things that I want this person to read this year? All right, now character. What kinds of heart issues need to be addressed? The first time I did leadership development, we read through the Bible. We read Spiritual Leadership by Oswald Sanders. We read some of Grudem's theology because I'd read that at Talbot Seminary. We read a book on biblical theology by Graham Goldsworthy. We were really theologically adept people who might be deeply in debt and dysfunctional when it comes to heart issues because we had a lot of content, but we didn't ever look at heart issues. So when we look at character, remember, no amount of knowledge can shape issues of the heart. You can have a lot of theological knowledge and be greedy and be a gossip and have hidden sin. So if you're going to develop leaders, you have to develop heart issues as well or character issues. Now, I find that these things are like finances and family and sexuality issues and those kinds of things. So most content, like you're reading books on theology or different things like that or what it looks to like to plant a church, but have you asked a person what their financial situation looks like? All right, so have you dealt with character kinds of issues? And then lastly, competence issues. What kinds of things does a leader need to learn to do? All right? So, for example, I would see a developed church leader, let's say like an elder or a church leader, if you have elders or whatever your leaders are called in your church, I would say a developed church leader needs to know how to have, he needs to know how to teach a little bit, like can you do a 10-minute devotional, knows how to have a gospel conversation with somebody, knows how to maybe handle some basic counseling issues. I'm not talking about like deep referring counseling issues, but some basic issues. What kinds of things does a leader need to learn how to do? If you're a youth pastor in the room, think of the same thing. What kind of content do you need to know? What kind of character issues need to be shaped in the people I'm developing? And what kind of competence issues need to be developed? All right, now, when I train church leaders, what I've done is I've come up with a list of 12 things. And I've said, these are the 12 things that I want to address in a leadership development. Some of them are content, some of them are competence, and some of them are character. So remember, choose a small group of people. Second, start to think through a process, and your process should be around these three things. Now, when I say process, you don't yet need to know like how many times are we going to meet or how am I going to do this. I'm just saying, what are you actually going to do? What are you going to train them in? What are you going to develop them in? All right, the next thing I would say is commit relationally. Number four is commit relationally. Remember that leadership development takes time, and it's going to start with pre-Christians or people that are not yet Christians, but leadership development can't just be a program. So let's say that you've decided, I'm going to take a group of six, let's say if you're a man in this room, I'm going to take a group of six men, and I'm going to work with them over the course of the next year. That's what I'm going to do. And I've thought through three or four content areas I want them to grow in, a couple of character issues we're going to address, and a couple of things I want them to learn how to do. All right, so now you've got to commit relationally to those guys and say, we're going to spend time committing, I'm going to spend time with these guys regularly, teaching them, committing life on life. All right, so if you just show up once a month and you just teach, what you'll find is that you're just a teacher. You're not replicating who you are. You're not doing true leadership development. You're just communicating content. All right, the next thing I want to say to you is number five is stay the course. Stay the course. For years and decades, you just keep showing up with leadership development. Let me tell you a little bit about how I have done this over the years. So when I was a pastor here in Huntington Beach, 5 years, our lead pastor did a thing called Joshua's Men. Now, this was like 25 years ago, and he had learned this from John Maxwell, I think, or Dan Ryland, or one of those guys. And what he did is he took 10 or 12 guys, and he invested in us for a year, and then he would take 10 or 12 guys the next year, and he invested in those guys for a year. And so when I first planted a church, in fact, one of the guys who was in our core group, Sean Palmer's here in the room, he was in my very first leadership development process. He was 20 years old at the time. When I first planted a church, I started to do this. So I took 10 guys, and I spent a year with them, and I thought through, what are 12 things I want to do this year? What am I going to focus with these? How am I going to focus? What are we going to focus on in this leadership development? And I spent a year with them. And then I spent the next year with another group of guys. And then I spent the next year with another group of guys. And then I would pull the guys from the first year into the second year and the third year, and we would spend time together. And what I've learned that over and over and over, if you just stay the course. In fact, have you ever done if you ever plugged like $200 a month or $500 a month into a savings calculator, have you ever done that and put an 8% interest at 50 years or something like that? And you go, if I just put aside $200 a month at 8% for 50 years, that's a long time for some of us, right? That will end up being $1.5 million or whatever. So that's what we do, and we save money. What I'm saying is you just have to stay the course in terms of leadership development. Keep showing up. Keep failing, because you're going to do a leadership development and go, all these leaders that I developed turned out to be losers. All of them have strayed off course. None of them have done anything. But if you just stay the course, keep showing up. Consistency, this is a quote from Larry Osborne, consistency is more important than excellence, is what Larry Osborne says. So just stay the course, all right, for years and decades. Keep showing up. All right, last thing, number six is, think beyond your church when you think leadership development. So don't just think about your own church. Think beyond your church. All right? Few churches, well, 85% of the 350,000 churches in America are plateaued or declining. All right? So you can't just think of your church. We're going to train up the leaders that we need in our church. But, I mean, building on what we heard yesterday, think about the fact that we need to be training up leaders to send out, not to just keep. All right, I think Dave Ferguson just talked about this yesterday, sending out our best leaders. It was really hard for me when Sean Palmer left our church and moved to Hawaii and planted a church, and now is a pastor of Daybreak Church in Hawaii. It was hard because I love Sean. He was a great guy on our team. We planted the church together. We were together for 3 or 4 years. He probably was the most gifted guy on our staff. And when he left, I didn't try to stop him from leaving. I felt like, this is good that you're leaving, but it's hard to lose good and talented people. It's really hard. But we have to think beyond our church, and we have to think we're training up leaders not just for our church, but beyond our church. The average church in America, you've read these statistics before, is less than 90 people and baptizes one person per year. All right, less than 90 people and baptizes one person per year. We're the plan for planting churches, raising up leaders, sending out leaders, all right? And then there was a quote up here that was back a slide that I just want to read to you. Robert Coleman says, the test of any Christian life is the multiplication of that life in others. In the same way, the test of any Christian ministry is the multiplication of that ministry in the life of others, in the lives of others. Now, if I'm summarizing all this, and then we've got 10 or 15 minutes for questions if you have any. If I'm summarizing this, what I would say is, what I've seen if you're in pastoral ministry is that there are three aspects to pastoral ministry. There's preach and care and lead. All right? So think of that. Preach and care and lead. Now, preaching means that you spend time preparing a sermon and you show up and preach that sermon. I would encourage you to invest time in studying and preparing good sermons and preaching those sermons. Care is that we care for the people that are in our churches. If you're in a smaller church, that'll be more hands-on. If you're in a larger church, it's going to be more of an equipping role. What I'm talking about here is lead. Now, lead involves a number of subcategories, so to speak. But one of the main things that lead means is I'm replicating myself in other leaders. I'm not doing all the ministry myself. So I would argue that if you're a pastor in the room, that those are your three top priorities, right? Is preach, care, and lead. And if you're preaching and you're caring for people, but you're not leading, you're not training up new leaders, you're not replicating yourself, you're relying on outside people to import in, then you're missing a major part of what Jesus did, of what Paul did, of what you're going to need to have healthy leadership in your church, of what we need in terms of sending out leaders. And so I would just encourage you, when you look at your time and your priorities, are you spending a big chunk of your time training and raising up leaders? All right, I'm going to stop because we've got 15 minutes before this session is over. And I'll take questions, or we'll end early, whatever is most helpful. Anything that you want to know about this? Yeah. Yeah, every year I choose a group of guys and I invite them into an intentional process. And I've done this with groups from 6 to 15. And what I found is when you get above about 10 people, I did this with a group of ladies issues twice as well, so I'll talk about that. So I've done this so many times that I realized when you get above about 10 people, the communication style in the room changes. In fact, Lencioni says, Patrick Lencioni, if you've read him, he says more than 8 people in the room, the communication style goes from inquiry to advocacy. All right, so if you have 12 elders and you try to do an elder meeting, I just don't want to be on that elder team because it's like people are fighting for their own view when you have that many people. I've just found that the sweet spot is between 6 and 10 people. Now, if you only have 3 people, that's fine. Then develop 3 people. Develop 1 person if you have 1 person. But if you're in a larger church context, I would say choose a group of 6 to 10 people. Invite them into an intentional process. I didn't talk a lot about what the nuts and bolts of this process because I've done a lot of writing on it, but invite them into an intentional process. I meet with guys once a month is what I do. In Southern California, meeting every week is difficult because people drive to work and commute. Where I live, everybody works in Irvine. It's like 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away. People are leaving for work at 6:30, but it's really easy to meet with a group of people on a Sunday night or a Monday night once a month. So what I do is I meet with a group between 6 and 10 guys. I develop a plan for the year. Now, I use the same plan every year now because I've built a plan that I like that works well. And by the way, you might say, will you send me your plan? That won't work for you. You need to think through, what do I want to train a group of leaders in? I mean, you're a church leader of some sort, so you've got to develop your own process. And then I'm a fan of meeting once a month is what I do. We meet for 3.5 hours once a month. And then they're going to do reading in between that time. By the way, if you're training church leaders and you're training people who didn't go to college and seminary, which we should be because we've led people to Christ, you can't expect them to go home and read Jonathan Edwards every month. And like this month, it's Augustine City of God. It's like people will kill themselves if you do that, right? So I realized a lot of the men that I'm training up make $200,000 in sales and dropped out of high school and were drug dealers and are now Christians. And they don't read anything but the Lakers box score. And so now I'm like, we're going to read Jonathan Edwards this month. No, you're not. Like, you better you have to lower the reading bar or you're just going to attract a bunch of seminary students. Okay, so audible.com, right? Listen, read podcasts, sermons. We meet once a month. There's reading in between. We finish the year with a 3 or 4 day retreat. So between 6 and 10 guys is what I'd recommend. I tried to do this twice with groups of women. Were you in both of them? Okay, my wife was in both. It was like, I felt like, I want to see ladies growing, developing in our church. We were a new church plant. So it was me and my wife, and I kept making women cry. So I'm in this, because I just kept saying things that it's like this, it didn't work very well for me to do it. And when my wife did it, it worked way better. So I would just, if you're like, hey, you might say, I really want to develop both men and women. I would just say, I just found that I didn't do it very well. So I tried really hard. I think women bring amazing gifts to a local church. I think that we need masculinity and femininity. I mean, holy cow, we need, God embodies the characteristics of masculinity and femininity. So we need to make sure that both men and women are involved. I just didn't do leadership development very well with women. So what I would say is, if you're a man in the room, find a couple of ladies in the church that can do that well. All right, when I was at Sojourn, we started a thing called Sojourn Women's School. So we had a pastor's school that I led. It was 90 future pastors. We met once a week there because it wasn't a commuter culture. And then we did a thing called Women's School. At my church now here in Irvine called the Village Church, we do a thing called the Apprentice Academy. It's 2 years long. It's men and women together. So you can totally do that. So we have both men and women in it. I just would not suggest as a male pastor that you get all excited and take a group of 10 women through this because I tried that and maybe you're just more sensitive than me, but it just didn't work really well for me. Well, in answering that, let me first of all say, he asked, is all this done in a group context? I'm giving you like a really broad overview of what could be 5 sessions where I could really take you and teach you. Here's exactly what this looks like. So let me answer by saying, the most important thing that you get out of this session, then I'll answer your specific question, is that you should be investing a solid amount of your time in developing new leaders. And you need a process to do that because if you don't aim for something, you'll hit nothing, right? Now, having said that, in my process, We have both a group aspect and an individual aspect. So what I've done is I've developed 12 things. Okay, so for example, one of them is finances and family. Because I know seminary graduates and seminary professors that are completely greedy and don't spend time with their families, but have a lot of content in their heads. Okay, so finances and family is going to be a part of that. Knowledge of Scripture is going to be a part of that. Understanding of biblical theology. I want a person to understand how the whole Bible works together, not just they understand systems or whatever. All right, so we're going to take each of those 12 areas, and then I have a questionnaire that I send out, and I basically, it's like a 50-question thing where I say, hey, will you fill this out so I can assess where a person is in these various areas? And by the way, a lot of people have never been asked, when was the last time that you purposefully looked at any form of pornography? Because depending on how you phrase that question, you get different answers. So I learned how to phrase it to get the answer that I was looking for. And what I would find is that it's interesting when you phrase that question, how many church leaders will say, well, 2 months ago, such and such. Like, it's amazing how big of an issue that can be with groups of men in a local church. So I would say, when I'm doing a leader, that's a character issue, right? That's not addressed in Grudem's theology. So somehow I've got to figure out how to address sexuality issues, and that's a character issue. So I've got to assess it. So I'm going to ask questions on the front end and then have a group process where everybody goes through the same things, but then an individual process where I work with guys one-on-one as well. I think so, yeah. I would say, and I get asked this question a lot in the church planting world, because especially if you're theologically rigorous because you're really excited about your THM and that sort of thing, then you tend to feel like others, before they can lead, need to have gone through all of these things. I would look at Mark 6, and I used this passage earlier. When Jesus gathered his apostles together and sent them out in groups of two to preach and to heal, guess who is still in the group? Judas, smoking pot in the back of the line, right? So, I mean, Judas was still... Jesus sent Judas out with that crew. Peter, like, they didn't even know who Jesus was yet. They weren't even clear on that. Peter hadn't cut off anybody's ear yet or denied Christ. Like, this was before all that happened. So what I would say is, look, if you have a person who's still sleeping with their significant other and not married and has a drug habit, I wouldn't make them a small group leader. However, in a church plant or a fast-growing context, I would say both of those things are true. So if you're a church planter, church planters and millennials, perhaps in general, are really concerned about being done with work at 5 o'clock these days. 15 years ago, we didn't think about that. Like, work-life balance does not apply to you quite as much if you're a church planner, because you're in two-a-day season. You remember when we used to have two-a-days before that was illegal? So you could actually have football practice outside when it was over 80. So you're in two-a-day season as a church planner or in a growing church. So there's a sense where, yeah, you're going to have to do more. Like, you might need to lead three small groups. You might need to lead three small groups and replicate yourself. However, I would also say, when you look at the pattern of Jesus, he didn't have seminary graduates that he was putting in place. So you might need to do a basic training and say, hey, we're growing really fast. We've got to get people in place, and we're just going to be really robust at working with them along the way. So I would say it's both of those things. You have to know your tendency. If your tendency is to throw people in way too fast, then I might say, back off a little bit, and it's okay for you to do more. If your tendency is to go, these people have to get up to speed theologically, you also have to consider the role. So if you're working in a children's ministry, or you're playing the guitar, or you're doing something that's not a spiritual leadership role necessarily, children's ministry might be, but not if it's with three-year-olds, right? Do a background check and all that sort of stuff, and you don't have to have a seminary degree to work with a three-year-old, okay? So, but if you're dealing with the small group leader and expecting that small group leader to handle basic care issues in a small group, you just have to do the best you can with an upfront training. So I think I'm saying, yeah, you have to put people in. And that's part of the beauty of church planting. Tim Keller says, look, new leaders are surfaced through in church planting that would never get to lead at such and such a Baptist church that's been there for 80 years. Because you have to have gray hair already in order to ever get into leadership. But in a church plant, it's like, if you're alive and you've been a Christian for a week, we'll take you. I mean, isn't that true? Right? So, good. What else? We've got 4.5 minutes before our time is up. Any other questions about leadership development or anything along these lines? I'm doing this as a lead pastor. So I think first you have to know what how are people perceiving you? Okay, so depending on what your role is, I think you need to contextualize that and figure out how am I inviting them in. So if I'm inviting them in as a lead pastor, one thing I would say is don't do this flippantly. Okay, so don't like you're walking, you're walking together at coffee. Hey, I'm throwing together this leadership thing. Do you want to do it with me? I would do it more intentionally and formally than that. Because you want to cast expectation that this is like, no, this is serious. Like we're gonna grow together this year. I'd use a lot of language together too, because you're not speaking over the top of them. We're gonna grow together this year. What I do is I don't send a formal like written letter, because we don't ever even go to our mailbox until the mail person's mad at us, right? But I would send an email and I would say, hey, I'm starting a new group where I'm gonna invest in 6 people next year. It's an invite-only group, and I'm sending you an invitation. I would love for you to be a part of it. I'd probably follow that up with, that's what I do. I'd follow it up with a phone call. I would introduce, our first meeting is going to be on, Thursday night, October 26th. It's going to be at my house. We're going to have dinner. I'll lay out all the details of what we're going to do. All right, so do it more formally. Don't do it flippantly just in passing, because you want a person to come in. If you're going to invest in 6 people next year, you want them to feel like, I'm going to take this really seriously. Like the guys that I invest in, they can only miss twice in a year or you can't do it. If you travel a lot for business, we only meet 12 times. You travel a lot for business, you're going to be gone 6 times. You might be super awesome. You just can't be in this group this year. All right, because you're not going to be available. And if you miss, you have to meet with me, because what if you miss the section on sexual issues or finances or whatever, like you don't just get to skip that part of Christianity. Let's come back and talk about it. So you have to meet with me one-on-one if you miss. And then, by the way, the way I shape those meetings is about 45 minutes or an hour of it is going to be me teaching them on something. But this is just the way I do it. It's not the way you have to do it. A lot of it's going to be dialogue around what we've read. If you're meeting at a coffee house every week, because you're going to pour into 5 or 6 people, it might not be you teaching. It might be more dialogue. And I want to stress, something is far better than nothing. You might feel like, I can't save money because I don't have $200 a month. Well, then put away $100 a month and save something. Develop one leader, because that's better than nothing. Yes? That's a good question. He asked, are you doing this ask for them to go through this the same time as you're asking them to fill a leadership role? It all depends on who they are. If you're taking a group of straight out of college students, or fairly new Christians that have only been Christians for 6 months, or you've got 45-year-old leaders who came from another church that you want to really develop personally, it's really all going to depend. However, I would say serving together in some capacity is a critical aspect of leadership development. I just wrote on this last week. Some of my closest friends in life are the people that I did set up and tear down with for 9 years in a church plant. They were 20 years old at the time. We were together at the crack of dawn in cold, rainy California, on Sunday mornings, and putting my hand up into that lock on the trailer, knowing that there's probably a black widow up there at 6 in the morning. Those a lot of those folks are still good friends today because we serve together. So I would say, like, oftentimes I'll say, in order to be in this group, you all have to be serving as a small group leader. You have to be all serving in something, or we're going to serve together somehow. It all depends on the size dynamic of the church and how many people you have. So if you're in a large church of 1,000 people and you might split it up among 3 elders, or you might say 2 of us are going to do this training. If you're in a smaller church and you're saying, I'm going to intentionally invest in 6 guys, should it be every month? Here, what I would say is, look, there's really no better use of your time. I know you have to preach on Sunday if you're a pastor, or you won't have a job if you don't do that 5 or 6 times, right? But I would say there's just no better use of your time than you meeting one-on-one and one-on-two meetings can work really well also, unless you're dealing with really personal issues. So I would say, yeah, you want to be meeting one-on-one, unless you're a larger church and you're splitting this up a little bit more. By the way, if you go to where I write, it's contextcoaching.org. I might have put it on your notes. Contextcoaching.org. I write a lot there, and so much of what I've written, I've coached hundreds and hundreds of leaders through and spoken on. So you can go search leadership development. If you can't find what you're looking for, send me an email, and I'll reply, I promise, and point you. I've written whole processes on this that answer lots of questions. One more? As a lead pastor, I'm actually not most of the time. This question comes up a lot. I'm not requiring them to do that. Now, I'm telling all of you, if you're a Christian and you love Jesus and you're in ministry in any capacity, why don't you take 2, 3, 4, 6, 7 people and invest in them and replicate what you love and what you care about? Now, systemically, as a lead pastor, I'm not necessarily requiring the whole staff to do this. I don't know that that turns out extremely well. I want them all to be developing leaders, but not all to be running the same process. And part of running a process like this is that you are creating and shaping culture in your local church. And I don't necessarily want 7 different people doing that at the same time in a local church that are all paid staff. Okay? All right, we're out of time. It's 9:47. Thanks for being here. You're dismissed.